is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick, sitting in for Joshua Johnson in Washington. Columbine, Virginia Tech, Sandy Hook, Parkland, Santa Fe High School. Mass shootings in schools are a nightmare we've experienced on repeat in this country. Tomorrow, Valentine's Day, marks the anniversary of the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, that left 17 people dead. Some of the survivors of that traumatic event turned their mourning into action. So here's what David Hogg, one of the student leaders from that school, said shortly after the shooting.
I don't think we're superheroes. I think we're what every American should be. We're people that are standing up and becoming politically active in our democracy in our own way. And I think what we saw last week with that walkout is students were walking out of school, but now they're going to walk into the polls when they're able to vote, and they're going to vote these people out of office.
Well, the work of MSD students, Emma Gonzalez, David Hogg there, Cameron Caskey, and many others, marked a change for gun laws in our nation. Their activism struck a chord nationwide. According to a Giffords Law Center study, last year lawmakers in 27 states passed 67 new laws aimed at restricting gun access. We asked for your stories of turning trauma into activism. Here's some of what you left in our inbox.
This is Debbie, and I'm calling from Virginia. In May of 2017, my 18-year-old daughter was hit by a drunken drug driver head-on on a beautiful Friday afternoon when they were coming home from the beach. Her best friend was killed, and my daughter was life-flighted to a level one trauma center with serious injuries, including a traumatic brain injury. In the beginning, we were obviously fighting to get her back and well and dealing with the legal issues. Now that those are done, I have been able to focus on making something positive come out of this. So I've become a local resource for other people with traumatic brain injuries. I've started a support group, and I'm in the process of writing a book to share our story and try to help other people. This is the best way for me to deal with this tragedy, is to help others.
This is Tassos from St. Petersburg. Activism definitely has a great impact, in my opinion, on traumatic experiences. One way to channel anger, sadness, grief, confusion, and fear is through activism. Activism through ACT UP was what saved my life during the AIDS crisis from 1987 to 1991. I felt never more exhilarated when I was storming the FDA and the NIH in Bethesda, Maryland, and in Washington to release drugs for people dying during the Reagan administration and Bush administration. Thanks for talking about these young students and their activism.
And thank you for sharing your stories with us. Well, joining me now to talk about the movement born out of the Parkland school tragedy is journalist and author Dave Cullen. He wrote the book Columbine and is now out with a new book entitled Parkland, Birth of a Movement. Dave Cullen brings us close up, spending time with the families and those students affected by the Parkland shooting. He's often called upon to analyze school shootings because of his experience. Dave Cullen, thanks for being here.
Hi, thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Well, Dave, a lot of people are familiar with the students from Marjory Stoneman Douglas High. I mentioned them and the movement that they started after their school was terrorized. I want to start near where your book ends, which is the 2018 midterms, the culmination of a difficult and painful year of organizing and activism. Was 2018 a victory for the March for Our Lives students? Did they get results?
Yes, it was a huge victory. You know, it took a few days for that to sink in because expectations had run so sky high by November. The unthinkable, maybe we'll flip the Senate too, even though everybody said that was impossible because of the quirk of the map this year. And so it wasn't a complete miracle, but it was an incredible achievement. I can run up through a couple of things. They flipped the House, collectively flipped the House, 40 seats, which was about double the rosiest estimates. Democrats in the House races won the popular vote by 8.8 million votes, which was even more than the post-Watergate landslide, which no one thought would ever happen again. There's so many different ways you can measure this. Turnout under 30 was crucial because that's who the March for Our Lives kids targeted. It was up 50%. It was 31% turnout this year versus 21% in the previous midterm. It was the highest ever recorded for people under 30.
Right. Astronomical turnout for people under 30. There's no doubt about it. There were so many other issues in the midterms, of course. Donald Trump, his presidency, investigations. We know all that stuff. You say in the book, though, that in 2018, people were finally voting on the issue of guns after try after try after try from gun activists. What's the evidence that in this election, people were actually going to the polls on that issue?
Right. That is crucial. And first of all, understand the setup that asymmetrical voting is what really had stymied this movement and allowed a tiny minority to overwhelm the majority for a generation. A very small pro-gun side because Dr. Robert Spitzer, who's an expert on this, says anywhere from 5 to 10% of people normally vote on guns. Very few people. And almost all of those gun owners pro-gun people voting. So it's completely, they're not offset by anything on the other side. So even a small number on the other side offsetting that would be a victory because then representatives would vote the majority. The Parkland kids got so much better than that. For the first time ever, gun safety registered on the exit polls. It came in fourth ahead of global warming, of almost everything. Fourth is just no one was expecting to come in fourth. I mean, it never registered before. And of those people, 60% said they were favoring gun safety this time, which is a complete reversal of what we'd seen before. And even this is astonishing. 42% of gun owners said they were pro-gun safety, which that's not a majority yet, although it's close because there's a lot of undecideds in there. But 42%, that's a massive, that is unheard of. Even in gun country, there's now about half of the gun country people are finally coming to this table and saying, yeah, we need to do something. We're ready to compromise with you. Let's make some kind of deal.
So that's some evidence then of a fundamental, real sort of political metrics that you point out. And then that sure. leads to the question that gets back to how these students organized and got started.
How did we get there?
How do you get there? I mean, what was fundamentally different about Parkland, different from Columbine, Sandy Hook, Paducah? I could go on, unfortunately, with the list. There was a movement after Sandy Hook. It ultimately failed on the legislative front, at least in the Senate, but there was something different in the aftermath of Parkland. What was it?
Well, there were a whole lot of different things. It was kind of a perfect storm, but the number one that I would start with, well, timing was crucial, but really the biggest thing was the messenger. We did not realize, so after each of the biggest tragedies, and the most horrible, after Columbine, Virginia Tech, and Newtown, each time we felt something has to change, Newtown was the one that was really going to put us over the top. It was so horrifying for those little kids, six-year-olds, and we thought, if that doesn't change it, nothing will. What we didn't understand was it wasn't about the degree of the horror, because we were shocked and horrified by all these. We needed the right messenger. So after Newtown, we thought Barack Obama was the best messenger, the most powerful. He was a, once in a generation person. He made it a focal point of his State of the Union address. He made a big push of it. Half the country was behind. Didn't work. That was the wrong guy. And first of all, probably it couldn't have been any politician because we're locked in this us, them, red, blue, we just choose sides. So half the country is going to be immediately against your side. But also, I think politicians are no longer really our leaders. And what we really needed after Sandy Hook, it was also the parents of the kids speaking out. And of course, we thought that's great spokespeople. This is an incredibly powerful person, someone who lost a kid. But you know what? Adults can never be the spokespeople. What we needed was, this is horrifying for me to say these words, but we needed the targets. When we see David Hogg or Emma Gonzalez or any of these other kids, we don't just see a kid who escaped with their lives. We see the face of future victims. And everybody who was a kid in school, everyone, I'm not a dad, but nieces and nephews, and I work with so many kids. Everybody's got a sibling, friends, cares about kids. They see another kid who's going to die. And when Jackie and David and Emma and Cameron and all these people speak to us, we know they're speaking the truth. And we see the future victims, and they're going to die. People like them are going to – we have allowed people like them to die for 20 years and done nothing. And that's powerful, and the truth hurts, and we realize we've been kind of despicable, and we have let these kids down, and that never happened before. So the right messenger really changed everything.
The right messenger, and in many cases, the right messenger with access not only to the media but to social media. We're going to stick with this, and we're going to get a little bit inside what it was like for the kids in the aftermath of the shooting, when they organized and when they reached out to others across the country to make their movement not just a movement of wealthy white kids in South Florida, but a movement of all students across America who don't want to face violence anymore. Stick with us. This is 1A.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from LegalZoom. If you want to make 2019 the year you finally start a business or secure your family's future, LegalZoom can help. With their network of independent attorneys licensed in all 50 states, LegalZoom can help you navigate your legal needs, from wills and trusts to LLCs, trademarks, contract reviews, and more. And the best part is, LegalZoom is not a law firm, so they don't charge by the hour. More at LegalZoom.com/NPR.
Castlemont High is different from a lot of other high schools.
This student, he got shot 4 times.
I was just standing outside and, like, heck of bullets.
He held the gun up to my head.
I'm Sam Sanders. 1 year after Parkland, we talk to kids who face gun violence every single day. Listen on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick, sitting in for Joshua Johnson today. We're talking about the March for Our Lives movement and the activists who led the charge last year. Dave Cullen, you made the case at the top that we haven't advanced 0 feet and 0 inches, that the Parkland kids did make some progress even in their first election. But let's go back a little bit. Take me inside those very early hours and early days after the shooting. We all watched the horrific sort of aftermath from helicopter television cameras and cable news when news of the shooting broke on February 14th. And then in the hours afterward, David Hogg and Emma Gonzalez and Cameron Caskey and others, they're bewildered and they're traumatized, as it's understandable. And then what? What happens?
Well, there was a quiet explosion going on social media that afternoon and that evening where the Parkland kids were connecting with each other and realizing the sense of outrage and what was going on, and that they were kind of formulating this idea that they needed to fight back this time and really rejecting that whole thoughts and prayers, you know, BS, and needed to do something. And really, 3 different kids set out on 3 different courses, which would be merged in a few days, that they had no idea something the other kids were doing something completely different. So Jackie Corin started organizing this trip to Tallahassee to do something immediately within the first week, to take busloads of kids to Tallahassee and confront the governor and the state legislature. David Hogg was getting on TV and being the first person out of the box, really starting this uprising on national television and speaking out. Cameron Caskey did something really probably most important of all. He was posting on social media and saying, this has got to stop. This is unacceptable. I'm not sure what to do yet. None of them weren't sure, had like the answers, but he said, I don't know what to do. I need help. Who will join me? Come join me. Figure this out. He went to bed and he created new profiles on all different social media and said, contact me on any of these different places. He woke up in the morning and his inboxes were full and people were showing up at his house. All these other kids with the same feeling, like, yes, we need to do something. I don't know what to do either. He organized the team. And within 2 days, he had 24 kids in his living room figuring this out. Jackie was at his house. David was at his house. Emma Gonzalez, who no one knew was about to blow up as this massive star, a day later, a Saturday, the team was there. They were working it out, figuring it out together. On Saturday, Emma gave that We Call BS speech, which just electrified America. And all America's like, okay, we're ready. Something's going to happen. So they joined forces with different ideas and different approaches and really different talents. And then they were off to the races.
We got a tweet from Mystic Warrior in Alexandria, Virginia, who said, are there examples of similarly inspired conservative activism? Less affluent inner city kids have been speaking out for decades. Where is the media coverage of that? And Dave, that goes right into something important in the early days of this movement that I wanted you to speak on, because you talk about in your book how Parkland students realized pretty quickly in this early sort of embryo stage of their movement that their situation wasn't like the violence that many other kids in other environments experience every single day. And I want to play a clip from one of the student activists that you followed. This is Jacqueline Corin. You mentioned her in a speech that she gave at the March for Lives march in Washington last March.
Parkland is the heart of this movement. But just as a heart needs blood to pump, my hometown needs the alliance of other communities to properly spread this message. We openly recognize that we are privileged individuals that and would not have received as much attention if we weren't for the affluence of our city. Because of that, however, we share the stage today and forever with those who have always stared down the barrel of a gun.
Dave Cullen, you write in the book, and I'm quoting here, it became clear quickly that suburban students feared violence inside their school, once in a lifetime, but horrific, and that other kids feared violence getting there, at the bus stop, on their porch, walking out of church. It could happen anywhere, and it did. And this is a sentiment that you write about driving the Parkland kids to reach out and link up with kids in other communities, and it was really important for them.
I think as adults don't realize quite how attuned high school kids today are. When they were watching all the previous horrors at these other shows, they were already irritated and frustrated and kind of sickened that the media went apoplectic about people like them getting attacked and were ignoring, for the most part, and kind of shrugging our shoulders and not knowing what to do about all the black and brown kids dying in Southside of Chicago, Baltimore, Compton, and so forth. So they already thought this was terrible day one. And so when it happened to, day negative, whatever. So when it happened to them right away, they wanted to do something about that. And so they were talking about that and how to do that. They weren't quite sure how to go about it. And they also didn't want to be like the white saviors. Okay, we'll do this for you. They wanted to partner with those kids and they weren't sure how to do it. And Arne Duncan went to Father Flager, who's a sort of like a great pastor in Chicago, who's a mobilizer of the African-American community and anti-gun, and said, like, who are the really smart kids who are doing something in Chicago? And he rounded up these activists who were, the peace warriors and kids from an organization called Brave and some others who were doing great things and getting no attention with no budget and doing amazing things in their school on a Friday night on March 1st, so about 2 weeks later, they got in touch with the Parkland kids and said, would you want to meet with these kids? The Parkland kids said, yes, we don't want to wait another week. Is it possible they come tomorrow? Hmm. Because, everybody's in high school. Like, they can only do it on weekends. And they didn't want to wait another week. So the Chicago people said, well, let's get back to you. Like, at 11 o'clock at night, Alex King told me, I got the text. And he said, hell yes, I'll be there. So the church funded, got them on a plane. The next day, they were at Emma Gonzalez's house. There were nearly a dozen kids from Chicago. And it's not just the South Side. It's from the West Side, too. And they met at her house and had this amazing meeting back and forth. And told each other stories and learned so many different things. And by the way, we learned about the Chicago kids told them about Martin Luther King's six principles, which made a huge impact on them. But from that day forward, they were partners and working on them. And then they went into so many other communities, but especially these kids. And then Alex and D'Angelo were also appeared at the March for Our Lives, first with neon duct tape over their mouth where they appeared on stage and ripped it off and spoke. And sorry, I get choked up on a couple of these things because, yeah. I mean, that was symbolically that we have been silent. This is how you have been treating us. They actually told me later on that it was the Brave group. They put together a press conference a couple years ago where they had teachers and community leaders and all sorts of different people in Chicago for a major press conference to get, they invited national media and all the different social, the Chicago press and no one showed up. And it was so disheartening, but they did it anyway. It was like an hour-long program. They said, we're going to do it for ourselves and each other. But That's what they were dealing with. Like, you know, what if they had this huge thing and nobody showed up? And so, and the Parkland kids are embracing. And so they've kind of merged these two different movements because, you know, the urban African-American groups who have been like fighting this cause for a while said, like, hell yes, we'll join you. And, you know, you'll help bring us the media and we'll do this together. And it's been a great. So to me, that's the most beautiful thing that has happened out of all this. And I had no idea that would be a big part of this. But you know, kids have a different perspective on race in America, really. And they're like, we're not doing this. We're not just doing this for white kids. Come on.
Hmm. And there's the scene in your book where the Chicago kids come to Emma's house. They have pizza. They swim in the pool. Then they start to knock their heads together. You told part of the story just there, the six principles from Dr. Martin Luther King that that the kids from Chicago brought. And then the movement, I'm flashing forward, comes up with five demands. They want to focus it down. They want to boil it down. Universal background checks is one I think that everyone is familiar with. What else?
Oh, you put me on the spot. Let me try to remember. A couple of them, you know, some of them were like basic things like that. And then a couple were behind the scenes thing that the FDA would be allowed to study this.
Right. The CDC, study gun violence. There's been a ban in Congress for many years. I think there was an assault weapons ban in there as well, a couple of other policy issues. We got this from AC Monroe in Pittsburgh, who tweeted, 97% of Americans support common sense gun legislation. Unfortunately, not even 45% of Americans show up to vote. So until we get a majority of Americans who actually show up to vote, gun legislation is dead on arrival. Sad, but true. And Dave Cullen, that brings me back to one other just sort of hard political question that came to my mind as I was reading this narrative of the kids' demands and their political activism. There is overwhelming support for universal background checks. We know the NRA plays an outsized role in politics, that politicians are afraid of a primary challenge if they're not A-plus on guns with the NRA. Is it that simple? A policy like 83% or 85% of people say that they're for universal background checks, and it still can't pass. Did you learn anything about the actual mechanics of that?
Yes, very much. And here's the dirty little secret of politics. It's not just 85% of the public or more. Congress people are very educated people. It's at least that number or more of Congress. Most Republicans want to vote for these things. These are sensible things. The list of five demands are fairly moderate. Most people in Congress, if they could vote their conscience and just do what they wanted, would be overwhelmingly voting for this. But the NRA, I don't know if it's appropriate to use this, but really have had a gun to their head and been threatening for a generation that we will end your political career if you take us on. And it has been this bullying tactic, and it's been this threat which blew up this year. And really, looking at the numbers at November is only part of the story. The much bigger story is it evaporated, that punched a hole in that paper tiger. No one believes that anymore, including Republicans who are running on it. And a lot of Republicans in swing districts like Bucks County actually opposed the NRA and ran on a gun safety agenda. The NRA could succeed. I was shocked by the numbers. They only spent $11 million this cycle. That's pocket change in politics. But by intimidating most of the field, they can only run in a few races. They intimidate everyone, so they're afraid of a primary challenge. So they get their way by scaring everyone into it and people believing. So that myth has been busted.
And you talk about intimidation, and we talked about the social media activism of the Parkland students. So let's go back to the early days of this activism. The NRA goes quiet for a while after the attack. It's according to their mass shooting playbook. They always do this. And then the group goes on the attack right around the time of the Oscars in early March. There's tons of vilification and attacks on these kids as soon as they speak up in this debate. Here's a little bit of sound, for example, from an NRA TV YouTube host calling out the students' march.
I want to acknowledge the heroism and bravery of Blaine Gaskill, the Maryland school resource officer who stopped the mass shooter in his tracks and saved the lives of every innocent kid in that school. To all the kids from Parkland getting ready to use your First Amendment to attack everyone else's Second Amendment at your march on Saturday, I wish a hero like Blaine had been at Marjorie Douglas High School last month. because your classmates would still be alive and no one would know your names. These kids ought to be marching against their own hypocritical belief structures. They hate machines that cause death, except, hold on, no, you ain't never gonna take their cars away.
Dave, that's pretty tame compared to the Twitter at mentions that a lot of these kids had around this time. Just take a quick minute here. Walk me through how the March for Our Lives students adapt and respond once they get attacked and their mentions start blowing up.
On the Oscars, I thought you were going to play the sort of Time's Up hourglass thing that Dana, is it Dana Lesh?
Yeah.
Did. The kids saw that and they're like, okay, we need to respond to that. And they had this kind of amazing response video that also went viral and I think got more than a million hits the first day. Everybody thought that was kind of great. I started to see the backstory on that. These guys I call the memes men, which I met a month out when Jackie and got approved to like let me into their secret headquarters. And I was kind of amazed. And she gave me a quick tour. And, you know, media hadn't been in there. So she's just showing me, like, you know, everything's like, here's the bathroom. Here's the, you know, storage room. And here's the writer's room. And I'm like, the writer's room? And I didn't say anything at first because I tried not to, like, intimidate sources. And then, you know, Matt Deitch, who I met, who seemed to be like, running a lot of them. I think, who's this guy? So I asked if I could talk to him. And he's like, oh, yes, come back and let's do it in the writer's room. And I'm like, okay, the writer's room? And he looks at me. He's like, what do you think this stuff is writing itself? And I was like, oh. And then I talked to Dylan Byerlein, who's really the kid who's like created all this stuff. And I had him walk me through their two most effective memes, including that one.
So,
and like, he's talking about the scripts. I'm like, oh.
Oh, so it's like real. It's
SNL.
A real. It's a yeah, real like, operation.
Well, yeah, Dave, it's like the SNL writer's room. Like, oh, that's why.
Let me stop you there for one quick second, Dave, because we're going to take a break and we're going to come right back and we're going to dig into what's next for the students from Stoneman Douglas High School on their fight and legislation. We'll be back in a minute. Stay close.
Support also comes from Rothy's. Rothy's is the everyday flat for life on the go that comes in four fashionable styles for women. The flat, the point, the loafer, and the sneaker. Fun designs and patterns while still looking polished and professional, with new colors launched every few weeks. Best of all, Rothy's are made from recycled plastic water bottles and completely machine washable, so you can feel good about wearing them. Go to rothys.com and enter code 1A to get your flats and free shipping.
Hi, this is Peter Sagal. For 20 years, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me has been making fun of the news with comedians and celebrity guests. We got silly limericks, we got terrible impressions. If you think the news is a joke, wait till you hear our show. New podcast episodes are available every Saturday.
I'm speaking with David Cullen, author of Parkland, Birth of a Movement. Dave Cullen, you took us inside the writer's room of the early days of the March for Our Lives movement as they were constructing their memes, getting on social media. One of the recognizable faces, you've mentioned him, is David Hogg, young man, nicely coiffed hair, very good on television. It should be said that David Hogg does, or did at least, take the bait in these debates, not only on social media, but on television. He's a debater. He's combative by nature and doesn't always play by the rules that the group agreed upon when they're doing this.
Right. David had the most trouble. So one of Martin Luther King's six principles, like the biggest one they focused on, is that when there's an injustice, the person is not your enemy. It is about the system or what's causing the injustice, not the person. And do not demonize that person. And these kids had strict rules about that. And David struggled with that the most because he is kind of a pugilist at heart. He strikes back. He's a counterpuncher. So he has a short fuse and he needs to, I think today he's much better than he was. But so he tries. They're imperfect at doing this. You know.
Also 17.
Yes, exactly. So, right, exactly. Thank you.
Or he was,
Right. He's 17, or he was 17, and like he lost people, his sister, you know. This is a bit of an exaggeration, but he said he started this. He became active to get out of the house from his sister, Lauren, because he couldn't bear to be with her. And I spent a lot of time with Lauren. And she was the closest one I saw to the Columbine kids with the vacant stares. She scared me. And really, over the course of 10 months, I could see in her face her improvement. Thank God she kept getting better. But early on, Being in that house with her was really angering him, and she lost four friends, and she was in rough shape. And he had a visual reminder every day over breakfast and dinner and throughout, like, this is what this does. And it was freaking pissing him off. And so he wasn't always able to check his emotions and play by all the rules.
There's the trauma of the event. There's the trauma at home and the symptoms that accrue after witnessing awful violence and seeing it in someone's faces. Forget about your Twitter at mentions and people saying nasty things about you on television. You report that these kids traveled around to events and got followed in some cases by counter-protesters toting semi-automatic weapons, a show of force. That's a different kind of confrontation.
It is. The group followed them across Texas. They decided to spend 4 days of their summer bus tour across America in Texas to go right to gun country. More than half of it was in gun country. And a group followed them around every event with semi-automatic weapons, probably loaded, or, you know, the kids didn't know. And the kids pointed out the last time most of them had seen that weapons was when the SWAT teams busted into their rooms, which is really traumatizing, pointing, you know, weapons at their heads in case the killer was in that room. Some of the kids shrugged it off and said, it didn't bother me. Like, whatever. It's a stunt. Some of the kids, it really got to them.
I'm also noticing a lot of people are writing in a little skeptical, maybe even some of them a little bit irritated by the positive tone maybe that they hear in your voice or maybe of this conversation between you and me, because it was such a horrific tragedy. People rightly feel awful about it. They don't feel positive and happy about it. But your book is one about activism, but also one of hope for the future. I mean, the end of the book is not a period end of sentence. It's next chapter, 2020. This is a movement built to last, or is supposed to be.
Exactly. And I take my cues from the victims. And when I was with those Parkland kids, it's like, this is their agenda. That's what they want to do. They are hopeful about changing this. And I'm, you know, who are we, the outsiders, to say, no, you need to be somber. And like, you know, how dare you react in a certain way? Like, come on. They want to change America. They are changing. Like, let's get behind them and not, as adults, tell them what to do and how to feel and how to act, or that we all need to, like, not have hope because this is a sad topic. That was their number one thing. Don't just give us your thoughts and prayers. We don't want you mourning for us. We want you to do something about it so other kids don't die.
Dave, your book ends on 2020 and what these kids have in store for the future. They are getting back to college. Some of them are still active. Some of them are trying to go back to normal life. And here's the question that lingered in the back of my head reading your book the whole time, especially at the end. What about being a normal kid? What about that? Being able just to do your freshman year like a normal kid?
Yeah, that's a hard thing. And a lot of it's out the window. You know, Emma talked about you know, getting to college as, let's face it, a celebrity, and going to a small college. And the first day, she didn't like the fact that she showed up and, like, everybody there knew who she was and kind of knew about her, and she wanted to be a normal kid. But they can't. You know, they'll have normal lives, but for this segment of their lives, at least, a handful of them are household names. Maybe, you know, most people don't know most of them. They don't know who Jackie Corin is. They don't know who Alfonso is. But they also, they accepted that. You know, that's part of what comes with the territory. They don't get to be completely normal, but they're having the education of their lives.
There's no normal, but the future is bright for them. And these kids are working hard to make a future that's brighter for the rest of the country, not only in their community in Parkland, but in other communities as well, the kids that they've teamed up with. I'll give listeners the last word. Aja wrote us on Facebook, "These kids are going to change the world. I am so proud of them." Well, Dave Cullen, thanks to you for joining. Dave Cullen's book is Parkland, Birth of a Movement. He also wrote the definitive work Columbine on the Columbine school shooting in Colorado. Dave, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd. And I'm really proud of those kids, too.
Well, it's great to have you. So many of us are proud of them, true American activists. Remember, you can subscribe to 1A's podcast on the NPR One app or wherever you like. We'd love it if you'd write us a review. If you're new to podcasts, you'll find all the links to listen online at npr.org/1A. The show was produced by Bianca Martin and edited by Miranda Fulmore. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. I'm Todd Zwillick, sitting in for Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for being with us. This is 1A.